Welcome to Fried. I am your host, Kate Donovan, burnout speaker, author, and unapologetic truth teller about what it really takes to stop feeling crispy and start feeling human again. These days, Fried is more than just a podcast. It is an entire burn bold ecosystem built to help you end burnout in your own life and in the places where you work and lead, which means there are three clear ways you can work with us. Number one, bring me into your company or event for burnout and emotional intelligence, keynotes, workshops, leadership development, and long-term advisory partnerships that help teams recover, reconnect, and rebuild a culture that actually buffers burnout vulnerability instead of creating it. Two, work with Sarah Vozin, our director of coaching, who brings the Burn Bold method to life through high-touch one-on-one coaching and small group burnout recovery. You can work with her privately or through your organization when you want deep, sustainable support for real humans who are on the edge. And number three, stay in our Burn Bold orbit through the conversations here on Fried, through our newsletters, through upcoming tools, trainings, and of course, through the new book coming in 2026, which maps out the six buckets and shows you why burnout is not your fault and exactly how to climb out. Fried has been running for more than 5 years and has become one of the most comprehensive burnout recovery resources in the world. Burn Bold is its next evolution. Together, they give you the knowledge, the strategy, and the support to create lives and workplaces where people can actually thrive. So settle in, take a breath, let something unclench. You're in the right place.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.
Fried fam, I have one of your very favorite Fried guests back today, Haley Page McGee. We did an episode together. Maybe, but you were saying about a year and a half ago. I probably should have looked it up before we started, but I didn't. And it is still to this day one of our most downloaded episodes of all time. I think it comes in second place only to one other, which is out of 300 and something episodes, tells us a lot. In that episode, if anybody wants to go back, we talked about boundaries. And one of the things that you taught me during that episode, or that I learned from your work before we get on, and then we talked about it more, was the differentiation between making a request and setting a boundary. And this is such a, I talk about it in my keynotes. I tell everybody your name because that was such a, when I read the information, and you'll have to go back and listen to it. We're not going to go through it now. But when I read through the information the first time, I was like, oh, duh, this is what I've been trying to say. But I didn't really understand what I was getting at. Like, I knew that there was something wrong there, and I couldn't find what it was. And when I read your words, I was like, holy shit, that's it. Yay! Yeah, yay! So today, we have Haley McGee back, and Haley helps disenchanted high achievers find meaning and purpose beyond conventional success. A certified coach, she has given hundreds to trade hustle for heart. I'm going to start that again, because I'm all over the place. All right. Haley McGee helps disenchanted high achievers find meaning and purpose beyond conventional success. A certified coach, she has guided hundreds to trade, hustle for heart, and embrace a new chapter that is radically alive. Haley's debut book, Stop People-Pleasing and Find Your Power, has been translated into 15 languages. Holy shit. And her work has been featured in the New York Times and Vox. In a world that drives us toward isolation and self-reliance, Haley envisions a world where people feel empowered to transition out of success-driven identities to build stronger relationships, invest in their communities, and contribute to the collective good. Haley, welcome back to Fried.
Hi. I'm so stoked to be back, Kate. Oh, man.
So I asked you before we get on, sort of a personal question. And I asked you if you'd be okay with me sharing this. And you said yes. So this is where we're going to start. Because if people want to hear other stories about you, they can listen to the last episode. When we were on the call that day, we were wrapping up. And I was thinking to myself, oh, she's not in a good place. She's real popular on Instagram. She's got a lot going for her. But she's not okay. And I thought for an instance that you might hire me in short time. I was thinking if she contacts me within the next few weeks, I'm not going to be surprised because she needs something.
Yeah.
And then you started a couple months later saying flat out on your Instagram account, I'm not okay. I'm disappearing for a little while. I'm not sure what's going to come out next. What the heck happened?
I know. And when you asked me that question right before we hopped on, there was this feeling of just like, oh God, you saw me. You know, the ways we try to be okay, there's cracks in the foundation, and that's where I was. And it the irony, I couldn't help but think of the irony, right? Because I'm about to put out this book. It's this like pivotal moment of being in the public eye, and there was nothing I wanted more than to completely disappear, which I functionally got to do a couple months later. So yeah, you were spot on. I was not okay.
So when you pulled back, you had created enough space for yourself to actually sit and do some deep thinking. And the story that you share on your website is really full. Like you're talking about all the things. And I want to get into the part where the work that you loved became something else.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
The misalignment.
That was the misalignment. Yeah. It's such a painful thing because I went into this work loving it. I mean, you know, back then when I was still working with, like, you know, my audience was people pleasers, helping folks advocate for themselves. And not just like I was known for creating content, but really my job, it was coaching. It was one-on-one, you know, with a computer screen like this, really getting a window into people's worlds and helping them. And so when I first got into that work, it felt almost too good to be true. Like, what an opportunity to connect with people in these soulful ways and help them in ways I had so desperately wished to be helped.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what happened and what I see happening to creators and coaches and whatever is over time, like I lost the heart of the work. A lot of that had to do with social media blowing up and, you know, building a business model where the way I got clients, the way I spoke about my workshops and events was really by the grace of the algorithm. So that's how people knew about me. And why wouldn't they, right? You get like hundreds of thousands of followers, you're going to put less effort into, you know, grassroots organizing and on the ground and meetups and stuff. And that's what I did. And for a while, it was a, you know, whatever you want to call it, a blessing, a gift. I felt so like, wow, how easeful that I can create this post and reach people around the globe. How lucky am I, you know? And I got that feedback from others. How lucky are you? God, what I wouldn't give to have, you know, whatever.
Your follower numbers, your engagement accounts, your shares, your whatever, all the things.
Exactly. Metrics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the problem with that was that my financial success was like completely and utterly tied to the success or failure of a post. You know, make a good post, you earn more, you feel more secure. Make a post that fails, you earn less and you're less secure. And it's not like I'm rolling in it over here. You know what I mean? Like, despite having hundreds of thousands of followers.
Actually, a side note, folks.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Heck yeah.
There's a weird, and I don't know where it comes from, but there is a weird assumption that if you do something like we do and enough people follow you, you're automatically rich. Folks, we produce this content for free or cost. It costs me tens of thousands of dollars to produce the podcast that I don't make back in the coaching that we sell.
Thank you for naming that. I want everyone to know that.
Like,
same with like eternal social media post. Like,
yeah.
I mean, frankly, y'all, like basically anytime you're consuming content that you're not paying for, the creator is paying, quote unquote, to put that out there. That is a cost. So there is a huge misconception that just because you have a big following somewhere, that's like a one-to-one of how much you're earning. That is so not true.
It is so very not true. For the first 4 years of Fried and my speaking career, if my husband hadn't been covering our bills, I would have been living on the street. There was no way. Like, I have used my privilege to create something for other people. And often it's treated as like, oh, well, they don't need it. Like, they're fine because they're popular. It's like, folks, we're still not really getting paid for this.
Yeah.
This is not where I make my money. Mm-mm. I love to do it, and we're not going anywhere. And I think that this is worth it because of the letters that we get, because of the people that we hear from, because I think this is worth it, and I still love doing it. And if we could sell out on Fried every single time without worrying about it, that would be great.
Right?
And we're not. That's not what's happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, that was a sidebar. But yes, important, because there's this very strange image that's projected on you when you're in the social eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily true. And it's hard to hold that. But the thing that I found to be really important in what you wrote was that you didn't really fall out of love out of coaching or fall out of love with helping people. You fell out of love with how you were doing it. This was the same for me with acupuncture. I still love acupuncture as a medium, and I'm helping people differently now. I know that was helpful. I had someone recently say, but I never had an acupuncturist as good as you, and I wish you were still doing it. And I was like, please don't say that.
Yeah. And I think it was your work. I remember when I was in the trenches, I posted anonymously in your Facebook group, just kind of being like, y'all, I have a, like, there were times when I overworked and I really pushed it. But at the time I hit my lowest low, I actually wasn't, I'd pulled back on my schedule quite a lot. Like, I'd pruned things back, and still I was at that low. And I was like, is it possible to burn out from like values misalignment, even if I'm having a cushy schedule and earning okay? And everyone was like, yep, listen to this episode. Maybe you can link it in the notes. There was like episodes about it on the show. And I was like, oh, thank God, because I feel, you know, the self-critic voice says things like, how lazy, how ungrateful, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth was, and I see this with my clients now, some people have to stop what they're doing. Some people have to stop how they're doing it, or the meaning they're making out of it. And that was me. Yeah.
Or the meaning that they're making out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the way in which they're vesting their identity, their self-concept, the meaning of life. I know for the longest time that was work. Not just work, success in work.
Yeah, successful work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, the ingredients for me were, you know, relying on the algorithm to be secure, which creates an extremely addictive relationship with it. It was also like, there was an ethical thing with the algorithm, because you may notice this if you follow like therapists, coaches, healers, the content that does well really sinks its teeth into an emotional sentiment of like righteous indignation.
Yes. And it makes me batshit crazy.
Yeah. Me too.
If I see another post that says no is in a complete sentence, I'm going to blow up. If you want any grace from anyone, anywhere in the world, you have to give them something. You don't have to want grace, in which case, just say no and walk away. That's fine. But if you are asking people to give you grace and you're not giving any reason for them to, sorry. That, like, and I think that the values misalignment point I want to bring up, because the deeper I went into the burnout research and the more time I've spent because I'm writing another book now, and the more time I spend in it, the word that comes up most frequently is mismatch.
Mm.
So what I keep coming back to and what I'm doing in my keynotes all the time and what I'm trying to do for leaders and teams that are together in an office is saying, listen, folks, we don't need a bad guy. Mismatch doesn't, there's no morality to a mismatch.
That's right.
A mismatch is just a mismatch. It doesn't mean anything except for it's not matched. That's it. And sometimes as part of a burnout story, there is a bully of a boss and there is a narcissist of a partner. And there, those things happen for sure, but they are not the majority.
Yeah.
The majority is a mismatch.
Yeah. Which can have as intense a toll. Like the feeling of mismatch and misalignment is real. Like it's not being highly sensitive, high maintenance, demanding. It's just like that ongoing friction and tension. It's a lot to hold all the time. I couldn't do it.
And it's the shitty part about it, and I think this is where we get into your story, is that the thing that used to match you can stop matching you.
Yeah.
And that's hard to swallow, because it's like, well, but this is what I wanted. And that's when you get stuck in the, but people say I'm lucky, but I should be grateful, but.
Yeah. It's weird, right? Because we all intellectually pretty much agree that like humans evolve. It's a beautiful thing. We change. But when we're in the emotional felt experience of, oh crap, I've outgrown the trappings of my own life or my own identity or value system, we don't like to let that go. I sure didn't. Oh my God, it took me so long. There's a grief process, probably, I think.
There is a grief process. In every burnout recovery, there is a grief process. A release of identity that's attached to something that doesn't need to be attached to anymore. All right. Now, you went through this process. Life started to sort of blow up. You had some family things going on. People had some health things. There was a death somewhere. Gaza's happening. You don't want to talk about it. The algorithm fear, all the things.
Yeah.
And you wrote this sentence that, oof. I was protecting my success, a choice I had every right to make, but that choice came at the cost of my integrity.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I know this sounds weird, but like I literally just got goosebumps like hearing you say that back to me, because I experience it so viscerally and remember that so intensely.
Yeah. And so the thing that... the thing that I really wanted to spend the most time on today was this idea that when you're in burnout recovery, you kind of have to pull away from responsibility from all things, including relationships and community, because you've got to like get yourself, you've got to put yourself back together. But if it stops there and you don't rebuild the connections and the community and the, then you haven't completed the process. And that's what your work is talking about now. And we don't spend a lot of time talking about it here. And when I read your work that you're doing now, I was like, oh, we need to remind people that there's, when your capacity comes back, you've got to be in the world again.
Yeah.
Tell me and how this came up for you.
It's just so wild because once again, I'm struck by like the assonance between our work, because even when we spoke about boundaries, just like straight up interpersonal boundaries, it's the same phenomenon, right? There's like the hermit phase that's healing and corrective. And then we reengage with the world. And like, it's so interesting because for me and probably others, it didn't feel like an intentional choice. It was just listening. And remind me, you just said, describe what that was like. Was that
Of that process of uncovering that one of the things that was really missing was that social connection.
Yeah. I think like, for me, I think my realization of that began before the burnout happened, because it felt like success and deeply investing in my communities and connections were at odds. There's a, you know, we all have limited resources by nature of like 24 hours in a day. And when I think back to the ways I loved and the ways that I involved myself in my community then, at the time, I didn't realize how lackluster it was. But it was an afterthought. I think I used that word in my story on my website. It was just, you know, the main event, the meat of the sandwich, it all, you know, that's work. And then if I have a spare moment, oh, maybe I'll shoot off a text to a friend, or maybe I'll go to this event in my community. But when I went through my burnout, which I sort of experienced as like a religious disaffiliation, it was literally like my faith, my North Star, my Holy Grail, promised land. Like, it's incredible the way like almost like spiritual language really makes sense here. It took what I had understood to be my North Star and made me feel incredibly disillusioned by it. It wasn't just that I felt I had quote unquote failed. It was that I felt I'd been like legit fed a false promise of where fulfillment came from in life. And I think I was, and I think most of us are.
I was fed and ate. So this, we're back to this idea of like, how do we get through this without that self-righteousness piece? Like, it is hard to avoid the game that we're all playing, but we are the system. We are the game. It's a continual, like, maybe the problem is that it's not always an understood decision, a conscious decision. It's just something you go along with because you're absorbing it. And then you go through some dark night of the soul, whether it's burnout or sickness or illness or whatever, whatever thing you go through. And then you're like, shoot, do I have to live like that? Enough of us do that, folks. And that's how the system breaks down. But we're all still invested in the stock market, and we're all still like, we are the stakeholders that we are complaining about, folks.
Yeah. Thank you for naming that, right? Because there's an element when we see how we're victims of something, it can be harder to recognize the subtle ways we perpetuate that very something. And no doubt about it. No doubt. So it was, yes, it was something I was fed, and then also something I continually made small and big choices to contribute to. No doubt. And I was so like, I mean, the feeling of like injustice, like it really felt like coming out of a religion where you're just kind of like, I can't believe it. Like, I thought back to all the, I mean, in college, like the brunches with friends I would miss because I was striving. The fact that I chose not to go abroad and instead did some crappy domestic thing in DC to build my resume, like all of these ways that that striving had robbed my life of its richness. And the by far the biggest one was belonging in community. And, you know, and some of that was my own heart, and some of that was reading and researching, which now informs my own coaching. Like, from where do humans get a sense of meaning in life? And it will surprise like literally no one to hear that like climbing the ladder and achieving a certain milestone are not it. Belonging is repeatedly cited as the number one place. And for me, I say this in my story too, but when I was younger, bullying was a big part of my story and social belonging was really not available to me. I had a couple major events in my adolescence and early adulthood that I was very much like ostracized from community. And so I think I developed a paradigm where like I could have like success was my happy place then. Look at this. This is my safety. This is my identity. So I do think there was an element too of in that burnout being like, all right, belonging is scary and it's something I've avoided but desperately wanted. And now's my opportunity to kind of, I don't know, climb toward it, really. Mm-hmm. Very much a key and crucial part of that.
Right. And find the aligned people. I think this is one of the most painful parts of going through burnout or whatever the hell else you go through, is the shedding of people that you thought were sort of there, and the loss of that, the grief of that loss. And then the idea that you have to now go out there and collect the right people, sort of. And in order to do that, you have to really be yourself. Because if you are malaligned when you go into a scenario, you are not magnetizing the right relationships. Like when I came back to the States, I had been in Europe for 12 years. I came back to the States. Most relationships that I had created, friendships that I had created from my childhood up until the whole way through, were based on. I'm a helper. I'll give you all sorts of things. I will never be indebted to you. I don't want gifts. I don't want that. I don't want you to do things for me because that puts me in a debt and I can't handle that. I'm going to control this relationship by being the giver. And then eventually I'm going to be resentful because I gave you so much, right? Like, it was terrible. I'm not
saying I can't relate at all.
I'm sure no one can. And when I came back to the States, it was not long before COVID happened. So all of a sudden, I was back in my home country, not in my home state. So I wasn't that close to my family. And we weren't supposed to be, like, you know, driving around and seeing people. And so I got pulled away from all the connections. And when I went back out into the connections, the only way I knew how to find them was through the business world. I joined the National Speakers Association. I joined a women's business group. I had to force myself. I gave myself this rule that I was going to ask everyone that I actually want, that I felt like I wanted a relationship with, that I felt some sort of spark with. I was going to ask them for a favor within 3 weeks of knowing them, so that I could start the relationship in a way that says, if they give me something, then they still can like me and love me and appreciate me. And I don't need to, like, provide everything in this relationship for it to work.
I love that. Oh my God.
So if I ever ask you for a favor, it's because I think you're great.
100%. I was at a party like last week where someone was talking about how for many of us, our default state when forming new relationship is like, oh, I'll increase connection by offering to help.
Yeah.
And we forget that actually asking for help in the early stage can be that intimacy up level. And it is, I mean, it's vulnerable, baby, but I too have been practicing putting myself in those situations and allowing for, you know, rejection even. And it's no doubt it's twice as vulnerable, but the connections you gain are better. They're better.
It's just that simple.
Yeah.
So you wanted more community and you wanted this sense of belonging, right? Isn't that the long-term Harvard studies that social connection is our, like, best longevity factor or whatever, right? So how did you do it? How did you get out there? Like, this is when you have a lifetime of not belonging, your nervous system is on fire when you're with people that you're not in control of the relationship of. A lot of us become coaches and therapists and healers because we can control the giving in the relationship and we're always at the top of the hierarchical structure. We don't say that. When we're coaching, we always say that we're like even Steven. We're not.
Right.
We're not. Right. Like, that's not true. Even if you feel that way, it's still not true.
Right. There's an imbalance. There's a power.
There's a power imbalance no matter what. Yeah. Right.
Right.
So you have this whole life of that. And now you're like going to go out into the world. Did you prep for it? Did you write about it? Did you just start doing it? Like, what did you do?
Oh, what an interesting question. Right. Like, what was that moment? I will say it was at that time that I kind of like made sense of this deep feeling of not belonging. Because like so many people who go through crappy events when you're growing up, you don't necessarily recognize their significance at the time. And it was only in retrospect, sharing with my then partner some of my formative experiences where I'll never forget when he like put his hand over his heart and his eyes welled up. And he was like, you have been through so much when it comes to like community and belonging. And just like when you read that sentence out loud to me, it was that moment where I was like, oh, crap, I have. So no wonder this is so hard. And that helped me approach trying to belong this time around with a lot of self-compassion and an awareness of like, ah, reprogramming old, you know, reactivities. This is going to be harder than I thought. And for me, it was like a two-part thing. Like approaching trying to belong was both applying that to existing spaces I was already a part of. Because to be clear, I felt like I didn't belong, but that's not because I had no one. It's because I was not actively, first of all, showing up authentically or investing heavily in the existing spaces I had. And then the second part was like, you know, going out into new spaces and finding new areas of belonging to speak to those parts of me. So like some meditation communities and some other things of that nature. which have been incredible. So the first one was even more vulnerable, right? Because it's people that are already in my orbit. It's people who are like halfway friends or in my book club that I've been running. But it's so vulnerable to approach these spaces and make clear, like, this really matters to me, you guys. I'm so delighted to be with you. Like, I care about this. Want to hang out every week, weekly dinners, potluck. Like, you're kind of making these bids for connection.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah. Well, and so interesting, right? You were like, because in this book club that I run, even then you were in a position of being the person in charge of the book club.
That's right. There's so much safety in that.
There's so much safety in that.
Yep.
And then we wear it like such a burden, but we pick it up gladly every time because we think it's safe.
Yep.
But safe isn't belonging.
Safe isn't belonging. Yep. That's so true. Right. I always say I'm more comfortable in spaces that have like codified roles, scripts. So that's both like the spaces I organize, like book club, and then also even like improv classes I took, which was freaking cool. That was a really great step toward play, new community. It was way out of my comfort zone. I'm not funny. But these, I mean, they were so good for me. But even that, right? It's like, I'm a student. My job is to learn. Like, I have a clear role in this situation. And so for me, like final boss level, what we're talking about would be like a party where I am just an attendee. Yeah. Like, that's my haunted house. Like, but, you know, and also what's interesting too, and this relates to like the last episode about people pleasing and boundaries and stuff, is like, I know, and this is going to sound like kind of annoying, but like, I know how to walk into a space as a, you know, recovering people pleaser and make people quote unquote like me and bring an attitude or a charisma that I think people will find appealing. That is a coping skill I've learned from like age two. The difference this time is like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I am actively noticing when that temptation is present to make the priority who will like me and subbing that out with like, I'm just going to try to show up as Haley, who is actually at times like quite awkward and kind of derpy and loves dad jokes, which does not make you super popular at a party. But like, so that's where the vulnerability came in. It was in letting that self out.
Yeah. It's scary as hell.
Yeah.
It's scary as hell. I had a situation come up today where I sent out an email on behalf of the National Speakers Association, of which I am the president, because, right? Same. And I sent out, our national organization said, please send out an email to people in your area that are part of us, but not part of you. And they should be part of their local chapter as much as they should be part of the national chapter. So I sent out an email. And somebody writes back with a little bit of an attitude right away, I think, but hard to read tone during email. So I'm being gracious that, you know, they could come, that they'd love to come, but we don't meet on Saturdays. We meet on Fridays, and getting into New York City on a Friday is too difficult. And I wrote back a really nice response. I'm so sorry that doesn't work out for you. They thought the meetings were at 9 o'clock in the morning. I said, well, the meetings are from 1 to 3. So maybe it's a little bit easier to get in to the city at 1. If it works out, we'd love to see you, whatever. The response I got was so condescending. And it was like, basically, I don't know why you're so stuck on doing it at this hour. I don't know. You're missing out on a lot of people. You're not serving your whole community. Like, really just like kind of went for it. And it took me going over it a few times in my head to be like, wow, this person just really needs to complain. But the idea that I was a disappointment to someone made me want to reach out, somehow fix it, offer an explanation so that there would be understanding, at least understanding. I don't even know this person. Like, now I feel judged by this person that I don't know. And it's really bothering me. And so I was going through this earlier today. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to reach out to the actual participants and our actual members and ask them if maybe we've been meeting on the wrong day. Because if I'm afraid that something is actually correct in what this guy is saying, if I'm not taking this seriously, then maybe I should just find out. No one wants to meet on Saturday. No one in our chapter, like literally not one person said they wanted to meet on Saturday. And I thought to myself, wow, he just really needed to be mad at someone. I happened to pop into his inbox at that time. And I got it, but because of all of my fears about belonging and all of my fears and all my natural people pleasing and all of that stuff, This just cost me an extra 2 hours of energy today that I really didn't need to spend.
Oh. And then afterwards, your nervous system is, to use your word, fried. It's like completely fried.
Yeah. From this interaction with a person that I'm probably never going to meet, not going to see, and have nothing to do with. So when you're putting yourself out there, there's going to be rejection. There's going to be uncomfortable situations. And you're going to have to learn to let people. I know I'm not going full Mel Robbins, let them theory, but you're going to have to let people not align with you, not like you, not appreciate you, not. And that's awful.
It's so scary. And I think it's especially scary when you don't have this like safe, ego-affirming, comforting nest of success to put your head in, right? Like, it's kind of like, I would be so curious to see some research. I don't know if it exists on like how many folks who do pursue like a high achieving path, you know, relate to and have this thing of like lack of belonging. Cause I think like, yeah, it can be our safe haven. And so there was something deep and psychological happening, but ultimately, you know, the research says, right, it's like, this is where our sense of meaning really can come from.
Yeah.
And it has to come with like a growth period like that.
Yeah. And those growth periods are always going to happen, right? Like, I think one of the things that you said recently on Instagram, I shut down the page. I thought I still had it open. One of the things you said was that if you're comfortable, you're not actually going through the process, basically, was the paraphrase.
Yeah. Yeah. The discomfort is necessary. Like, it's not only okay. We don't just want to practice acceptance. We want to see its like necessity and utility in the process of transformation. Because like, I can say firsthand, the most profound transformations I've experienced so far have rarely been fully voluntary. They've been the result of reaching an endpoint or whatever, being so far outside my comfort zone that I'm, you know, forced to evolve somehow. And yeah, so it's extremely uncomfortable.
And it's choosing one discomfort or the other.
That's right.
Like the discomfort of staying where you are and being burnt out and not being aligned with what you do, or the discomfort of learning what would be aligned and what, you know,
Exactly.
It's awful. All right. I'm going to read a little piece of the closer to the end part. Hoping to anchor myself during this time of change, I joined a meditation community. Over the course of months, sitting silently and watching my mind, I began to develop a compassionate appreciation for me. ... My mental health slowly returned and my creativity with it. This time, instead of exploiting my creativity entirely for work, I let it roam free. Guitar, book clubs, themed events. After a year in the trenches of transition, I finally felt clear enough, grounded enough to return to my business in a new way, and most importantly, a new topic. That's hard. How did you decide, or did you not decide? Did you listen and discover the new topic and then tell everybody what the new topic is and what you're up to these days? And
yeah, it was so hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And like, and I think it's so important not to sugarcoat it because again, right? Like, I'll just be frank. Like, you develop a big brand and like you put out a book on a topic, you develop an identity around something. There's a real quote unquote cost to saying, I want to do something different and like give myself permission to evolve. And the more I've followed creators, the more I know that this does happen. And almost every creator who has pivoted has some like revolutionary story of how scary it was and how they got through it. But the costs are real. Like, you risk, you know, yeah, your expertise, your finances, you've developed a following that follows you for this thing. And it's like, well, let's see. But at this point, I mean, the feeling misaligned had created such a wound inside me that I just knew there was no way back. It's just like, well, onward and upward, we have to do this. And I spent a really long time not knowing what the this was, because I knew I wanted to coach still, as you said. I really love actual coaching. It's so fun. But yeah, even some of the language and polarization around people pleasing, boundary setting discussion was not feeling aligned with me. And frankly, I've always coached from the place where like my training and my personal story intersects. And I think like pretty much almost everyone does. And over those years, like my story had really changed. I described this in the thing, but like I went through some really intense events, like losses of family members, a relationship that was like beautiful and devastating with someone who was sick, and some other things that like, I mean, I was grappling with mortality like every day. I was thinking about meaning and existential paradoxes every day. And I was also watching the world like collapse around me and political systems unravel and like tragedies. And so I got to be honest, like the work of like people pleasing recovery and self-advocacy is crucial. I think I wouldn't have been able to pivot had I not done it. But I was no longer feeling called to that. And I really wanted to explore content that felt like more in the realm of like meaning making. How do we make sense of our experience here? And how do we deal with transition? And I had a couple false starts, like as often happens. I was like, oh, I'm just going to do transitions in general because like they're so much fun. And last time I niched my business too hard. And that was interesting. And it was a great learning opportunity because I was like, I don't want to niche down too hard, but this feels too broad. And it was staring me right in the face. It was like, Haley, you coach from your story. Like disenchanted high achievers wanting to find meaning and purpose beyond conventional success. And the reason I was so drawn to that was because how do I want to talk about this? Like something I see a lot, this is kind of my core driver behind this is, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this really, like in the space of whatever you want to call it, like identity reinvention, burnout, overworkers, high achievers, perfectionists, like whatever we want to say. I do feel like the theme that I often see is shifting from that into like self-care and a more individualistic ethos of approaching that. So I'm not going to do this anymore. Now I'm going to, you know, take care of myself and set these boundaries and focus on me in a different way. And again, I just want to be really clear. I think that's crucial work. But in my work, what I'm actually even more interested in is like how in the pursuit of success, we actually lose connection to people, community, and broader systems like the earth or faith or whatever it is that really are shown to give us that deepest sense of ultimate meaning. So bringing a more like communal lens to this work of like burnout, recovery, and healing and saying like, where am I investing my meaning? Where is meaning in life? So what are your thoughts on that whole thing?
Because I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
To be clear, I'm obsessed with this idea because I think it is absolutely, I think you're right. The work of like kind of pulling back, pulling yourself together, setting your boundaries, figuring out who you are, realigning, all of that work is individual. And I don't think it can be done another way. I think it has to be done that way. I agree that it's critical. I wouldn't use the word but. I would use the word and. Yeah. That work is critical. And then you should have the foundation and the energy and the drive to take the next step. And I think because not enough people are talking about what you're talking about, including us here at Fried, including us, because we're not talking about this enough, people are getting stuck on the me platform. And it's not their fault. It's our fault. We taught them that. We have not taught them yet how to go from the me platform back into the world. And I think your work fixes that gap. This is why as soon as I saw you coming back out with it, I was like, Haley, come back on the show.
I'm so glad you did.
We need you. Need you for this reminder. And it was a very similar time that I just released an episode a couple of weeks. Well, I don't know when this is going to come out. So I released an episode in October about how I was going through PT for my shoulder. And the guy was like, no, your injury is gone. You're just weak now and need to rebuild your muscles. And now that's another place that we get stuck on that me platform is like, we get to the point where we've recovered enough, we've rested enough, But then there's a rebuilding phase that happens. And I think part of that rebuilding phase is the reconnection phase. And I think that the vast majority of all of us talking about this topic are missing that thing. And I think you're filling a gap that no one else is filling. And I think it's magical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Cool. I really appreciate that feedback because that was like a gut sense. But you know this space like a million times better than me because I'm just a noob. And I think yet again, right, the parallels between the burnout recovery and people pleasing, which is a form of burnout. It's the same thing. We hermit and too many people get trapped. It's safety seeking. It's oh God, I'm afraid I can't exist in community because then I'll fall into my old roles of overgiver or such.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
You know,
you have to be brave enough to try.
Yes, you do. And I have a theory. It might be completely wrong, but I have a hunch rather that like, and maybe this idea of the linearity, the whole like, if we're seeing it as a three-step process, like burnout, followed by intensive self-care, rest, et cetera, followed by re-engaging with the world. I can say for sure that for me, those last two phases were a little bit more entwined. Yeah. Like, of course, like I say in my story, I was in acute burnout. I had to rest and disengage. But part of my like strength and self-concept and selfness came back through the engaging with community and putting myself out there. So like,
Yeah. And I just think that again, your work popped up in my brain and in my face. And I thought, gosh, why isn't this the same when I learned about your work with boundaries? It was the same reaction that I was like, why the hell didn't I think of that? Like, what what have we, like, of like so obvious when you see it. But yet, we're stuck on that me platform. Which I'm fine with the me platform because most of us never stood on it in the first place. You stood on the you platform.
Yeah.
The thing that other people made of you. People pointed at a platform and you stood on it. And going through burnout is getting off of that platform and getting onto your own platform. That is a process. You need to do that. Amen. And then once you're on that platform has to bridge connections to other platforms. Oh, this is a really good graphic.
I'm seeing the flowchart. Yeah, I'm seeing too. It already. God, it's good.
Right? Like then once you're on your me platform has to connect to an us platform.
Absolutely.
You don't get off the me platform necessarily. You bring it with you.
Yes. Yes. And then they co-create each other, like being part of the we platform will infuse new colors and vibrancy into the me platform. And you'll experience parts of yourself you never knew were there, but were elicited by the people around you. And like, that's the beauty of community. Like,
yeah,
God. And I think
sometimes,
Nope.
But I think you said this in your story and you've said this on Instagram posts in the past few weeks. You're going to have to be okay with sometimes making sacrifices for the we from your me platform. And as someone who's burnt out in the past, you have to be really aware of when that's happening. And that's the crux. Like you were saying before, people are afraid that they're going to go back to their old behaviors. They're going to be, yes. And you're never going to be part of a we, part of the us platform, part of the we platform, whatever we want. Did we just create a whole new thing together? Should we do something?
I think we did.
Yeah.
TM. Come on, baby.
TM. Trademarked, folks. Don't take it. But in order to be a part of that, the connection piece that connects your little platform to other me platforms has an exchange in it. And you're going to give some of your stuff to some people sometimes, and sometimes some people are going to give their stuff to you. So you do have to learn how to sometimes break your own boundary momentarily, understanding that. But you have to also know that when somebody else is offering their stuff, that you not only should allow yourself to take it, but you have to take it or else you're not part of the platform.
I'm snapping. Hallelujah. I love this so much. And I think the research supports this. Like in my book about stop people pleasing, I spend a whole section distinguishing between what researchers have called pathological altruism, which we can understand as people pleasing, and healthy altruism, when you, you know, recovery isn't about never giving again, right, never compromising again, never being altruistic, but it's about making sure that the moments you do that both don't totally screw you over, frankly, yeah, in terms of health or emotional well-being, and that they're just coming from a place of intrinsic motivation, meaning I want to do this, as opposed to I'm going to do this to get some secret validation reward from you.
Or if I don't do this, they're going to think I'm a bad person, or a fear, right?
Fear.
That if I don't do this, I'm going to be a bad person. We say when we go over the perfectionism, people pleasing, all this stuff in my keynotes, I tell them that there's one question that they have to ask. I say, has anyone ever gotten rid of perfectionism in the room? And of course, nobody raises their hands because, like, mm-hmm, that's ridiculous. No matter how many books we've written on how imperfection is okay, like, none of us have gotten there. So then I say, here's the rule. You can engage in perfectionism if it doesn't require self-abandonment. A little tiny bit of sacrifice is not self-abandonment, because you can do that from a place of being full. If you're getting off of your platform completely in order to walk over to somebody else's platform, get the fuck back on your own platform.
Hell yeah. Yes. Right. And that's a great distinction, because otherwise what we would functionally be saying is, like, service, altruism, compromise, etc., cannot exist without them being people-pleasing or self-abandonment.
Right.
And that's absolutely not true, because research also shows that when we engage, ironically, all this stuff is so ironic, it's like when we engage in healthy giving that's driven from a place of true desire, it actually enhances our not only well-being, but sense of self.
Yeah.
Because our sense of self is informed by the people we're in connection with. And so that's the sweet spot. That's really
figuring
it
out what healthy giving means. And there's a story someone told me a long, long time ago that is in my book. And she said that this guy told her this story. And he said, every single one of us, I'm calling it a platform now, but for years I've called it a knot because of this story. Every single one of us as a human, we all, right above our heads, we have a knot, like a sailor's knot, part of a net. And it is connected to every other human all over the globe. And your job is to take care of your knot first and foremost, always. This is the me platform. You've got to take care of your knot, because when you don't take care of your own knot and it starts to sag or fray or decay or disintegrate, guess what happens to the knots of the people around you? They have to work twice as hard because your knot is falling apart, because you got out from under your knot and you're standing under you're running between four other knots trying to save everybody's lives. Is it your knot? And is your knot safe enough right now? When it is, just that is already giving to your community. When your vibration is higher, when your heart and brain resonance coherence is aligned, that means when you go to the grocery store, you're spreading better stuff. You are already helping your community. But the knots are still connected to one another, and there's still energy transference between them. This is the part we have to learn.
That's such a good visual. It's such a beautiful visual. It's of individual and collective, for sure. And just wait, like, for those folks who are like, oh God, like, my own knot needs attention, I'm done with other knots. The stealth surprise, at least for me, and I write about this in the last chapter of my book, was like, after working through the people pleasing enough where I could actually engage in like healthy altruism or like genuine giving, I was like totally shook at how great it was. Yeah. Like the thought of like making my friend soup when they're sick and bringing it over, in the past, that would have been like, ugh, just another thing on my list of ways I show up for other people. But like now I can honestly say that like those little acts of generosity or care, like they're like the best part of my day, and they make me feel like me. There's a real self and a real identity beneath them. So like, yeah, I do think that's the part we need to move into.
Agreed. Haley, it's 5:14, which means we've been here for an hour, which is awful news.
Terrible.
Terrible news. I'm not done either. It's really common at the end of an episode to be like, we could talk about this forever, but we could honestly, literally spend more time here for our own benefit and for everyone else's. But as we wrap up, what do you want to leave people with? And then you can do the where to find yous and all that kind of stuff. But what do you want to leave people with?
When I went through my own like burnout and existential identity crisis, you could say, while I was in it, it felt like capital TWT, the worst thing.
Yeah.
I was so distressed and
I was like, twa?
The twut. Come on, guys, get with the program.
It's like, that's like, an interesting way to think.
I'll work on that one for next time. I'm dying. I'm like sweating and dying. Okay. Yes, the worst thing. So like, and if you were to look at I journal every morning, and my journals from that time are just like so depressed, and it really felt like the end. Yeah. But what I can safely say at this point is like, I am so grateful for that total collapse of like everything I knew to be true and everything I thought I was. Because on this other side of it, and the side is growing, I'm nowhere near done. I'm sure it'll happen again in 10 years. Like, life is an endless cycle of transitions, but God, life feels so much more meaningful now. And like, I say this in my story, but I truly trust that like, if I were on my deathbed looking back at my life, like where I've arrived now and the communities I'm invested in and the sense of interconnection I feel and purpose and service, like that's the good stuff. So if you're in that place, like you don't know what's ahead and it could be really, really beautiful.
I love that. All right. Now all the places, where to find you, where to go, all the stuff.
Love it. Okay. Instagram's where I'm sharing stuff every day. Well, not every day anymore because I have some boundaries now. But yeah, Instagram at Haley Page McGee. I have a newsletter and you can check that out on my website, HaleyMcGee.com. And then I also offer private coaching and a book club called Hustle to Heart, which enrolls on a quarterly basis. And we'll start our next one in January.
I love it. Haley, a million thank yous for your willingness to go through your processes out loud.
Thank you, Kate.
All right, Fried Fam. This is another one for the books. What I'm probably going to want you to do right away is pause wherever you are and send this to the person you were thinking about while you were listening. Just go send it to them. And then probably rewind to the beginning and do it one more time, because this one requires a little bit of space and time to percolate and digest. And I want you to have it because it's critical. All right, Fried Fam, I adore you. Until next time.
Welcome to Fried. I am your host, Kate Donovan, burnout speaker, author, and unapologetic truth teller about what it really takes to stop feeling crispy and start feeling human again. These days, Fried is more than just a podcast. It is an entire burn bold ecosystem built to help you end burnout in your own life and in the places where you work and lead, which means there are three clear ways you can work with us. Number one, bring me into your company or event for burnout and emotional intelligence, keynotes, workshops, leadership development, and long-term advisory partnerships that help teams recover, reconnect, and rebuild a culture that actually buffers burnout vulnerability instead of creating it. Two, work with Sarah Vozin, our director of coaching, who brings the Burn Bold method to life through high-touch one-on-one coaching and small group burnout recovery. You can work with her privately or through your organization when you want deep, sustainable support for real humans who are on the edge. And number three, stay in our Burn Bold orbit through the conversations here on Fried, through our newsletters, through upcoming tools, trainings, and of course, through the new book coming in 2026, which maps out the six buckets and shows you why burnout is not your fault and exactly how to climb out. Fried has been running for more than 5 years and has become one of the most comprehensive burnout recovery resources in the world. Burn Bold is its next evolution. Together, they give you the knowledge, the strategy, and the support to create lives and workplaces where people can actually thrive. So settle in, take a breath, let something unclench. You're in the right place.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.